Australia's publicly listed companies are under shareholder pressure on a number of fronts. Individual activists, the powerful proxy advisory services, and the long-term institutional investors looking for environmental, social, and economic outcomes from the companies in which they invest. They share one thing in common: their frustration with the current AGM model. In this program, we hear from Eric Mather, the MD of Regnan Governance Research and Engagement, Alan Evans, the president of NRMA, and joining the discussion by phone is shareholder activist Stephen Mayne. Eric Mather sets the scene.
In terms of the AGM, what is its effectiveness as an agent of change, and what is the evidence of anything that's actually changed as a consequence of the AGM? And going the next step further, if I was the company director community of Australia, I'd be sitting down now, breathing a sigh of relief, saying, thank God it's over. And then I'd say, ladies and gentlemen, didn't the rabble make a lot of noise this year and create some bad headlines, but we've all still got our job. And it's 11 months till we have to face up again. So I just want to put that one out there. The AGM doesn't actually change much.
I think it does, actually, Eric, because during the course of the year, if something comes up, you say, well, if we took decision A as opposed to B, how would we answer that question at AGM if someone raised it? So it does influence your thinking if you've got an AGM where people are actively involved and asking questions, because you know you're going to get a question about something. So it does influence your thinking.
In response to Eric's question about what's actually ever changed, look, the key thing that changes things at the end of the day is the voting. And what we've just seen this AGM season with the remuneration reports, with Transurban 59%, Boral 58%, Wesfarmers 50.5%, Qantas 41.5%, Valad 76%, we've seen record protest votes against remuneration reports, and we've seen some record votes against directors. Now, obviously, no director has yet been voted out of a top 50 company, but you will see some directors strategically retiring for fear of the vote that is going to come at the next AGM. So I think the real pressure from AGMs is just seeing the vote that actually happens. I just wish more institutions would vote against more resolutions and more directors. And on, specifically on pay, I would give you Telstra and Macquarie Bank as two examples of big companies that had big protests against remuneration reports that then changed their practices as a result of that protest. So it's not the words at the AGM that necessarily has the big impact. It's the transaction of the voting. And if you can have some rhetorical dressing on the top of that to really put the point to the directors on top of the actual voting, then that's very important. And I often ask for the proxies and look at the proxies and then comment on the proxies and say, righto, Chairman, you've just had 40% against your remuneration report. Tell us you're going to change for next year. Tell us you're going to take it seriously. And that combined, the protest vote and the personal pressure at the meeting, can have a big impact on behaviours into the future.
Questions from the floor. It's over to you. Judith Fox.
Question for Eric. Eric, I've heard you talking about growing up in the country and sheep being pushed through the sheep run where they get a trim in sensitive places, and that you thought the directors needed to go through a similar process. And given that you think the AGM doesn't change anything, and that's the only place where directors can be voted on or off, how then do directors ever get pushed through the director sheep run?
Yeah, the problem that I've described in the past privately up until now with Judith was growing up on a farm every 6 months on a sheep farm near Bathurst. We'd put the sheep down a race, and you'd put your killers on one side and you'd put the breeders on the other. And you'd go out and you'd buy some more breeders and you'd build up the stock. So to continue that analogy, my view is that what happens is that at the AGM we put all the sheep down the race and we go, ooh, I don't like you, and then go off to the breeders. Ooh, yeah, I don't really like you, and still go off to the breeders. So nobody goes off in the killer side. The killer word is the wrong thing, but that just happens to be what you do with sheep. The problem that I have is that 96% of all directors get a yes vote. And as much as we've got great directors, when I was growing up, we had a bell curve, and there's no way that a 96% in favour vote is healthy for anybody. It's not healthy for the director community and the many good directors who are out there, and it means that there's no weeding out. So the shareholder community has got to get a bit of an idea of what is its talent pool of directors out there. There are too many lawyers and accountants. There are not enough engineers. My 9-year-old can work that out. No one's doing anything about it. So the shareholders have got to start promoting those types of people that they think should go onto the board. and whether it's, you know, Stephen Mayne is softening them up. But I do think that in terms of to get the change, the only way the change will occur is by quiet meetings. If you, Judith, are the chair, I'm going to knock on your door. I'm going to say, Judith, I've done my research. These are the concerns that we've got of the skill set of the board. I do think that you've got these skills that are missing or you're overweight these skills. Please explain. And then I'm going to badger you to go out there and think more broadly in terms of your director talent pool. And then obviously, if you sell it appropriately, you should be able to get the yes vote when you do put them up.
There was a question over here just then.
The question I would ask, Eric, is this. If AGMs are not an agent for change, how do you deal with the situation where you have your nice little briefing, your cup of coffee with the chairman before the meeting to voice your concerns on behalf of your clients, and you don't like the chairman's answer? Those institutions that you represent can influence the course of the AGM. Are you going to go to the AGM and raise your point?
It's a very good question. I'd have to say that institutions are inherently conservative, and they're very nervous to go to a meeting and raise issues in public. What's different between the institutions that I represent and retail is if I'm a retail investor, I might hold 20, 30, 40 stocks. As an institution, though, my clients, they actually own every single one of the top 200 stocks. So you own everything. And you're likely to own those stocks in the next 10, 20, 30 years as well for diversification reasons. And that means that your interest in the company becomes different. Going to an AGM and criticising the company in public, knowing that you're still going to hold that stock in 10 or 20 years, is not really your first step. I think the implied question, though, Frank, is that it should be part of the toolkit. And I don't disagree with you whatsoever. I do think culturally, though, institutions are only just starting to embrace this whole idea of engagement. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying the AGM is useless. I'm just saying that it needs to be part of an overall governance package over a 12-month period.
Rob Elliott, AICD. I was just wondering, in the spirit of getting a greater communication in companies and shareholders, which part of the shareholder chain isn't telling the directors and the companies who actually does do the voting? It's very difficult for the directors to know who to engage with, because in some vote it's the trustee who actually votes, other times it's the fundie, and so on. It's very difficult unless there's the investor side actually disclosing who actually is doing the voting. What's the problem there?
Look, at the end of the day, I know you've already had a session on proxy advisors. In relation to the ASX 300, they are clearly the power behind the throne. I support wholeheartedly what they've done, but the ability, particularly of Risk Metrics, the ability of Risk Metrics to deliver a big against vote is phenomenal. For a long time, the proxy advisors in Australia were recommending against things and were being ignored. And for a long time, we've had ridiculous situations getting, you know, high 90% support. But in the last 2 years, this has turned around. So if I was a director, the only canvassing I'd be doing would be seeking the recommendation of the proxy advisors. That's where the power lies. But I do agree with Rob's point. You should be disclosing where the voting authority lies. In the case of ARIA, if they've got it all, that should be out there. If it's the case of fund managers, that should be out there too. The companies deserve to know who actually holds the votes, which will be cast. But my recommendation is go outside to the third-party proxy advisors, because they've got a lot of power.
It's good that Stephen talks about the no vote, and it's what the media focus upon. I think that all shareholders, retail or institutional, also have to learn a new skill, and that is to say what they are in favour of. Because we've become experts at saying what we're against. What we're not very good at is saying what we're in favour of. And I do think that shareholders could be far more constructive taking to boards ideas about individual directors and skill sets that they'd like to see, still allow the board to make its own suggestions, but to take those things and shop them through and activate on those issues as passionately as we activate against things would be a very healthy development.
I get up at every AGM where there's a proposed increase in the board fees. I usually get up and support it and make the general comment that we've got too few directors doing too much, none of whom are being paid properly, and you have a ridiculous situation at most companies where a CEO is earning more than an entire board. We need to pay our non-executive directors more to get more quality people in there, to have them doing less. People should get behind the idea of a good NED on a top 20 company earning $500,000 a year, but only sitting on two or three boards in doing that role.
Eric, are you going to lean on the big end of town to make that happen?
You've got the power. Come on!
Look, I think Stephen's heart's in the right place on this one, but he's not on the money. I think that what has to happen is that the shareholders in that situation, and Stephen's, he's fingering what the problem is, but I think the solution is you've got to run those directors down the race, and you've got to put some killers out into a different paddock.
Eric Mather, before Eric, Stephen Mayne, and Alan Evans from the NRMA. There's more podcasts to come from the CSA's 25th National Conference.